To answer is human. To question is divine. Welcome to the world of the Hidden Gateway, an exhilarating podcast exploring the concepts humans have been struggling with since the dawn of existence, such as, who are we? Is there such a thing as good and evil, or are they arbitrary constructs? Does the paranormal exist? How can we evolve to a higher state? Can our mind influence what we term as reality? Providing a transcendental approach combined with hard-nosed humanistic analysis, we invite you on a journey to question your worldview in this theater of life. Join our host, Justin Williams, as he explores the outer realms of faith, the supernatural, human potential, and even our concepts of the universal creator with a fascinating array of guests. This is the unseen world, magical, mysterious, and mystical, where your only limitation is your imagination. This is the Hidden Gateway.
Welcome back to the Hidden Gateway podcast. As always, I am your host, Justin Williams. Today's guest is Nicole Sirotek. Nicole is known as the original New York whistleblower nurse. In May 2020, she traveled to New York City at the beginning of the pandemic to help. She didn't expect to find gross negligence, complete medical mismanagement, and blatant disregard for human life that she saw in those inner city hospitals. After a video of her begging for help to save her patient's life went viral, her life as she previously knew it was destroyed. Nicole made a promise to herself that she would continue to fight to help patients receive safe, equitable care, so she founded the American Frontline Nurses, a 501c3 nonprofit dedicated to advocating for patients. Nicole, welcome to the Hidden Gateway podcast. How are you doing?
Good. Thanks for having me on.
You're welcome. And as I told you before we hit record here, thank you so much for being on the show. So I want to hear your story. I mean, I said a little bit in the intro there, but obviously didn't do it justice. If you could, you know, go back a couple years, wow, maybe like 3 years ago and tell me how all this all this played out for you.
Okay, yeah. So funny story, not so funny, but back when the pandemic first started, remember when we were all like sheltering in place, lockdowns, people are just dying in New York left and right. You know, they needed all these ventilators. So that was 2020. So of May of 2020, I went to New York as one of the nurses that they were looking for because I was a flight nurse. I did trauma, flight. I know how to manage ventilators. Please don't mind my dog. She freaks out every time she knows that I talk to the computer because she's going to try and get a treat out of me.
All good.
So I went to NYC to help out with the pandemic because I thought, hey, how often as a nurse do you get to help serve your country not being military? And I'm like, I'm everything that they need, a flight nurse that knows how to manage ventilators. And I went and it was absolute chaos. It was, I mean, I still can't even comprehend how we allowed what happened to actually happen. So you remember on the news, they're like, oh, we need ventilators. Oh, we need nurses. Well, did they specify what type of nurses that they needed? Did they specify what type of doctors that they needed?
No.
Did they ask for anything other than a ventilator?
No.
No. So they, first things first, they brought the wrong type of doctors. I was taking orders from podiatrists, gynecologists, ophthalmologists. I'm just like, what is going on here? And then they brought the wrong type of nurses because they just thought a nurse is a nurse. Like they brought OR nurses because remember all the surgical centers were shut down. Only right. ICUs and ERs were left open, really. So they brought OR nurses. They brought school nurses. They brought medical surgical nurses. I mean, there were some other stuff, like other types of nurses that they brought. And I'm just like, do any of you know how to manage a ventilator? And the answer all the time was no. And even if they had ER and ICU nurses, a lot of the times they don't actually know how to manage, like program, set up, start, check and test a ventilator. So I'm just like, what is going on here? And then everyone, they wanted ventilators. They wanted 30,000 ventilators, but there's a lot of an associated equipment that goes along with the ventilator. So if you're on a ventilator, you also need a feeding pump. You also need sequential compression devices to make sure that you don't throw blood clots in your legs. You also need turning assistive devices. You need gastric decompression devices. And then on top of that, once you're on the ventilator, you're running anywhere from 3 to 5 medications at a minimum into you to keep you sedated, paralyzed, and comfortable on the ventilator. So did they bother to get us those pumps? Mm-mm. I mean, I was robbing Peter to pay Paul. Yeah. I'm just like, how much longer until your guy dies so I can get that pump? Because I need it. It was like literally the absolute sheer number and volume of death became transactional. And they'd be like, oh, you know, probably another hour or two. And I'm like, okay, I get first dibs on that pump. It's just like, what is going on? Like, it was just insane. And then you start to realize that people don't know how to manage the equipment. They're not familiar with certain types of medications. You know, they had no concept of ventilator management or ventilator troubleshooting. And that was really what was killing people. You can't put somebody on a ventilator and not feed them. Right, you can't put somebody on narcotic medication to keep them sedated on that ventilator and then not actually worry about a bowel regimen program, because opioids and narcotics will cause you to become constipated. Did anyone bother to make sure that they were on some type of bowel regimen so they didn't end up with like a paralytic ileus?
I found this on the web.
Siri's like stalking me right now. Or ended up with a perforated bowel where you go sick and die anyway. I mean, it was all of these types of things that were going on. And when I realized what was going on at the first hospital I was at, I'm just like, okay, I'm gonna get this little Hispanic lady off the vent. She's literally at only 21% oxygen on this ventilator. 21% oxygen is room air. And I'm like, I'm literally keeping her sedated just to keep her on this ventilator. I'm like, let's get her off. And I kept pushing the doctors. I'm like, let's get her off. She doesn't need to be here. You know, she came in with a fever. That was it. Because the news told them, remember on the news, if you have a fever, if you have a cough, all these symptoms, you need to go to the hospital. And then we overran the hospital. She came in with a fever. She never had trouble breathing, never had a cough. She just had a fever. And her door to intubation time was 15 minutes. I'm like, we need to extubate her and get her better and get her home. Like, I mean, her white blood cell count's fine. Everything, all her labs were normal. Let's get her home. And I kept pushing, and I think that's what really got them upset, is they kept saying, oh, well, there's a high reintubation rate. A lot of them don't make it. And I'm like, absolutely everything in her labs and her assessment and her weaning, her ventilator weaning and sedation vacations say she is going to be 100% successful here. Mm-hmm. And so what ends up happening is they end up moving me to another hospital. They said, oh, we don't want you at this hospital anymore. Wow. And I'm like, what? Huh. And I'm like, what's going on here? So, and then come to find out, I had that patient, I think every night for about 2 weeks, and they replaced me with an OR nurse, and the patient ended up dying because they didn't know how to manage the ventilator. So you obviously have somebody paralyzed on a paralytic. They can't breathe for themselves because you've paralyzed them. And then if you mess up on the ventilator and the ventilator isn't set or working appropriately, you're 100% dependent on the person managing that ventilator to breathe for you, because you're paralyzed, you're on a paralytic. And that's what ended up happening, is what my team lead had told me. And I was sitting in my hotel waiting for a reassignment. And when I found that out, I just lost it. I just lost it. Because that little Hispanic woman, the reason that she lived for 2 weeks when everyone around her on that unit was dying is because during the day shift, she had a trauma nurse from Tennessee. At night, she had a flight nurse from Nevada. Both of us knew how to manage a ventilator. Both of us knew trauma and critical care. And they took the day shift nurse away, and then they took me away, and then boom, the patient dies that night. And I'm like, how is it that these two nurses managed to keep one patient alive for 2 weeks when it was 100% mortality rate on the unit? Then I get reassigned to the next hospital, and that's where they were just rolling out the clinical drug trials. Everyone was on remdesivir. At this hospital, we had a lot of like legitimate ICU critical care nurses that many were CCRNs or nurse anesthetists, so they were used to dealing with a lot of these medications and ventilators. So people were living longer, but everyone that was enrolled in a clinical drug trial was dying. And then I had this one Black man patient. He was in his 50s. He was, you know, really tall, physically in good health. And it like he was honestly, we were at a point where keeping him on that ventilator was actually putting him at risk for secondary infections. And I'm like, hey, let's get this guy home. He's like still strong and robust. Like, let's send him to an LTAC with a trach. Like, let's get him home. He's still got good muscle mass. I mean, all like, if we leave him on here any longer, he's going to end up going septic from all these lines being in him. Everything is normal on him. And once again, like, they didn't want to listen. All these excuses as to why we can't take people off ventilators. And then the clinical drug coordinator comes in and she's like, oh, your patient needs this med, which is remdesivir. And during that time, they were trying all these clinical drug trials. They pulled everything off the shelf that failed research and development in all these pharmaceutical companies. And then they just started throwing the book at everything. And in the beginning, we're like, oh yeah, novel virus, give us whatever we can to save these people. We'll try anything. Everyone's dying. And then you start paying attention that everyone in the clinical drug trials is dying. And it literally says, there's like a piece of paper printed out that said remdesivir clinical trial posted on their door. And they're dying. And this clinical drug coordinator comes up and she's like, oh, your patient's been enrolled in this trial. I'm like, and I literally stood there and I'm like, the fuck he is? I'm like, who consented to this? I haven't been able to get a hold of his family. There's no contact information in there. Yeah. Like, honestly, I, you know, later on, I honestly believe he was undocumented because there was no trace that I could track down of him, his name, or his family. Because I tried to get a hold of them. And I'm like, there's simply no way. There is no way you got a hold of a family member when I couldn't get a hold of a family member because there's nothing in the record. There's no ID. There's no wallet. There's nothing. And she's like, oh, well, you know, we're going to give it. He's been enrolled. And I'm like, he does not have COVID anymore. He does not. He is tested negative 3 times. I'm like, so what are you treating? And they're like, well, he's just been signed up. And I said, nope, he has not been. And so then she like literally at this point, I'm getting really snatchy. I'm going to hold my ground because I'm not going to have like another thing like happened with the little Hispanic lady. I'm like, you're going to have to drag me out of here kicking and screaming at this point. And so then they bring the charge nurse over, and the charge nurse, she was this nice, tiny little Filipina nurse. And she's just like, but he really needs this medication. And I'm like, he really doesn't. He really doesn't. And she was just such a nice nurse. She always bolstered us and made us feel better and raised our spirit. She was a really great nurse. And I'm like, I'm not backing down. And then when the charge nurse couldn't convince me, they brought admin on call, which is kind of like the head nurse for the hospital that was on for the night shift. Mm-hmm. And they're like, and then she comes in and she took a much tougher approach with me. And she's like, well, we'll send you home. And, you know, meaning the hotel. And we'll tell the staffing agency that you refuse to work. And I said, fucking send me home. I literally, and I, you know, I'm from the hood originally. I grew up poor. And I'm like, when diplomacy fails, I start turning gangster. And I'm like, fucking send me home. I'm not from this town. I'm not from this state. I came here to help you. I don't fucking need to be here. And, you know, and so her and I, and we're starting to bump heads really bad. And my gangster is coming out. There is no amount of Ivy League education that can take out your inner gangster. There's no etiquette class that can take out your inner gangster when people push you. And I'm like, so send me home. I'm like, you can, you know, I'm not declining my assignment. I'm not refusing to provide care. I am literally telling you, I refuse to hang that medication. I'll be more than happy to continue everything on. And I'm like, so what are you going to do? And she's like, you know, so they stall mated me and they're like, okay, fine. And I'd go through the shift without another incident. You know, everything goes fine. The next day or the next night shift that we come in, I get 2 completely different patients. And I really didn't think anything of it because sometimes we had to be flexible and move around, take different patients, whatever, no big deal. And then I, 2 hours into the shift, they move me units. And I'm like, what? I'm like, do they need me on this unit? Is there like nobody that knows how to manage a ventilator? Because that's why I was put on the unit at the last hospital, because literally nobody knew. And I'm like, okay. I'm like, maybe they need me up there. No big deal. I'll switch. But when they took me away from my 2 patients, both on ventilators, I had to give each patient to another nurse. Now you have one nurse managing 3 ventilators each. And they're like, go upstairs. And I'm like, okay. Sure, I'm not, you know, whatever. I'm here to work. I'm here to help. And then I go out like into the hallway, get on the elevator. As I'm getting off the elevator, another nurse is getting in that I rode the bus with. And I'm like, hey, girl, where are you going? She's like, oh, I'm going to this unit. I'm like, what do you mean? I just came from that unit. She's like, yeah, I guess they need help down there. And I'm like, they just took me off that unit. And she was an OR nurse, you know, really great OR nurse, you know, but she doesn't know how to manage ventilators. Typically, you would pair an OR nurse with an ICU nurse and do team nursing. Okay. And she's like, I don't know. They just told me to get down there, like, right now. And I'm like, this is bullshit. I'm like, it's a rigged system. At this time, I'm losing it because once again, my inner gangster, no one is listening. Mm-hmm. And they literally don't want to get these people off ventilators. And that's when I made that video. And I'm like, can somebody please help me? Because the previous night I had stayed up late. I started calling advocacy groups. But remember, everything was literally closed. Everything in New York was closed other than what was essential.
Right.
But I'm like, and you know, I'm not from New York, and it wasn't until like then that I started to wake up and pay attention to what was going on. So I literally Googled Black Lives Matter NYC, thinking I could find someone that would help me save this Black man. I'm like, this is a protected population. We're educated all the time to provide safe, equitable care to vulnerable populations. And I'm like, there's gotta be an advocacy group. I tried Black Lives Matter. I tried CMS. There was also OSHA and the Ombudsman, other numerous advocacy groups. I even called a Black LGBTQ group because I'm like, a lot of times they can refer you to another group. Oh, we don't know anything about that, but here's a sister organization or someone we know that can help you. Nothing, nobody would help me. Nobody would answer me. Like, it was just ridiculous. And I'm just like, they don't want these people off this video. And so that video was actually a Facebook Live. And I had several hundred nurses that were on my Facebook from my personal profile. And I was just like, guys, what did I not do right? I've done everything that they taught us to do and nothing is working. And so I'm using them as a think tank. And what you can't see is that there were comments, do this, try this, blah, 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 blah. And I'm just like, okay, I need to get to this new unit before, you know, they need help. You know, a patient's not getting help because I'm sitting in here crying like a baby because I'm trying to help this man. And I get, so I suck it up. I clean myself up. I head into the unit and there are 7 nurses for 4 patients on a non-COVID unit.
Oh my Lord.
And I'm just like,
Jesus.
Yeah. You know what I did? They're like, there was like literally nothing for me to do. I'm like, do you want me to clean the walls? Want me to mop? I'm to organize supplies. Yeah. I'm like, I'm not going to just sit here on my, sit here. She's like, oh no, just, you know, go have a snack. Sit down. I'm like, what do you mean? Go have a snack. What do you mean? Have a lunch break. I'm like, what's going on here? I'm like, I thought we were in a pandemic. We don't get hour lunch breaks when the world is falling apart and the world is ending and people are dying. You don't get an hour lunch break. Mm-hmm. And at that point, I was so, so mad. I was shaking. I called my husband and I'm like, I need to leave because I'm going to start throwing tables and chairs and I'm going to start screaming and I'm going to hit something. Mm-hmm. You know, that's just, I'm like, diplomacy has completely failed. Everything has completely failed. Like, it's just ridiculous. And at that point, I called my lead and I'm like, I need to go back to the hotel. And then she's like, oh, are they being mean to you? Meaning like the staff. And I'm like, no. And I explained the whole situation to her. And she's like, oh, have you never worked in a teaching hospital before? And I'm like, yeah, I've worked in a teaching hospital before and we don't murder our patients. Yeah. And she's like, oh, this is common. I'm like, where are all of you from that you think this is normal? And, you know, a lot of people on social media and everything after that video pegged me as some, like, literally some hick from the sticks. And I'm like, no. Like, you don't understand. I've worked in refugee camps. I've been to Syria. I've been to multiple medical missions in Haiti, you know, South Africa, Nigeria, South and Central America, even just before this. And I'm like, you can't tell me that I don't know what to do. Like, that I'm just some, like, hillbilly from the middle of nowhere in some bumpkin town. Mm-hmm. I'm like, when you get in a helicopter, when you get in an airplane and you're supposed to land somewhere and save someone's life, you better be able to bring it.
There you go.
So I am highly, highly trained. I mean, and quite honestly, I'm rather average. So there are actually better people out there than me. And I'm like, an average was the best that they had. And I'm just like, and I said, I just need to go back to the hotel. And I'm like, because I'm going to throw something because this is unacceptable. We cannot just let these people be, you know, treated like this. And so she calls me an Uber and she's like, well, you have to check into occupational health to make sure that you're not like mentally unstable and going to hurt yourself. And I said, I'm not suicidal. I'm homicidal. Why aren't you listening to me? And I mean, I got gaslit from point A to point B. Yeah. Because I get in the Uber, they send me back to the hotel and I go to occupational health and they're like, are you going to hurt yourself? Have you created a plan? And I'm like, what are you people talking about? I was going to throw a chair through a window and start screaming at you people and probably get arrested.
Right.
And she's like, okay, well, the trauma counselor is going to come. She needs to talk to you. I'm like, okay, like, sure, whatever. I'm sure this is part of like, you know, covering your ass for the organization. Mm-hmm. And she's like, okay, what's going on? I explain the situation from point A to point B. And she's like, you know, I hear that a lot. And I'm like, and I'm like, yeah. And my face just dropped because I'm like, the trauma counselor is going to help me. We're going to do something, you know, we're going to get a plan, help this person, you know? And honestly, what I thought was going to happen is that video is like, as I'm having a mental breakdown and that video count is just like every second is like 1,000 viewers are hitting that video. I'm like, you know what? The cavalry is going to come. I don't know. The police are going to come in and kick you open that door and be like, what are you doing to these people? That's how naive I was. That's how naive I was. And this trauma counselor, she's like, okay, well, you know, you seem fine. I'm like, I know I'm fine. She's like, well, I need to go to your hotel room and I need to check to make sure that you don't have anything that you can use to harm yourself. And I'm
oh,
like,
oh my God, really?
Why is everyone concerned about my life? And I'm telling you that they're about to kill that man in that bed, but he gives a shit.
Right.
And I'm just like, okay, fine. I mean, what am I going to do? Strangle myself with my dirty scrub pants? Like, what? Why are you so concerned about me and not the man I am trying to save? And then, you know, at that point, I'm just like, I'm done. I'm going to go to sleep and I'm going to figure something out because I'm being emotional right now. And then I wake up and that video is everywhere. The video is everywhere. The New York Post ends up doing an article. People are contacting my family. News outlets are contacting my family. My family's getting threatened because they thought I was a crisis actor. They didn't think I was a real nurse.
Oh, my Lord.
And then it was just chaos from there. And I had to sneak out of the hotel because everyone was talking about me. But good thing we all had to wear masks because nobody could identify me.
There you go.
And, you know, I get into an Uber to go to the airport. And the Uber driver's like, oh, do you know that nurse from Nevada that like said that they're killing people? And I'm like, oh my God. Like they're gonna interrogate me, the FBI is gonna come. Like, what's going on? Like, I have never been in such a situation that the entire world knows who I am because I was cussing and sobbing on a video, wiping my snot on my sleeves. You know, that's not the best representation of somebody with my level of education. Mm-hmm. And I'm just like, okay. And then you get to the airport and everyone's talking about it. And I'm like, oh my God. And I'm starting to like freak out. Yeah. So anyway, I make it home and then my entire community turns against me. The entire healthcare system in my community and everyone was like, oh, she's a fame seeker. She just wants attention. Mm. And then I'm like, you know what? I got gaslit so bad. When I got home, I legitimately thought I did make it up. And then I'd have to go back on my phone and look at all the videos. And I'm like, nope, I am not crazy. I really saw what I saw. And honestly, I like literally lost my mind. I thought, you know, my husband had me see a trauma therapist and she's like, no, you're normal. She's like, I think you're getting gaslit because that's what you're expressing to me. And I'm like, I'm not lying. Here are the videos. I showed her the videos. I'm like, I'm not lying. I'm not lying about what's going on. And nobody believes me. And, you know, nursing, I've always been believed. I mean, it doesn't necessarily mean that the doctor or the administrator ever wanted to actually do something, but they believed me. And, you know, because when we bring something to your attention, that's literally our jobs as nurses is to bring problems to the attention. So that way nothing happens to the patient. Mm-hmm. And ultimately I ended up connecting with this attorney named Rachel Abramovitz from NYC. And she's like, I'm Jewish. There's an entire Jewish community that's being treated like this. They're telling me that they're killing the patients. She's like, and she tells me the recordings. I'm like, that's everything that I saw. And after that, I'm just like, nope, I am. This woman believes me and she's an attorney. That's a person of authority, you know? And we, from there, we just started to try and get people to listen to what was going on in the hospitals. And every avenue was shut down. We tried for months. And ultimately what I ended up doing is I ended up starting American Frontline Nurses because I'm like, look, we as nurses, our job is to keep people alive in these hospitals. We know how to navigate healthcare bureaucracy. And then it came out where a lot of the Hispanic community and Spanish speaking community reached out to me. A lot of like radio and television and news networks from South and Central America. And they're like, hey, you know, what's going on in America? Are they really killing Hispanic people? And I'm just like, yeah, they really are. They really don't care. They really don't. And they don't even use a language line. They'll just be like, oh, he consented. And I'm like, what? I remember one girl, we got on the bus and she's like, the doctor said that the family consented to whatever procedure for this Black woman. And she's like, but she speaks a rare indigenous language from some country in Africa. And I'm like, it's not on the language line. And she's like, no. I'm like, did you call the family to interpret? And they're like, no, we weren't allowed to. And I'm like, so you told her to write her name on the consent slip, even though it wasn't in any language. Wow. And nobody could speak the language to her. Dang. And she's like, yeah, that's so wrong. And I'm like, but you did it.
But you did it, right.
I mean, it's such a rare, like, such a very remote area. I still can't even on a Google search find this language. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, and we're all thinking this is okay. And like, we're taught to use a language line. And if we can't use the language line, because there are like dialects and things like that, like in my hometown, there's the Basque language from the Basque population. And it's some type of a hybrid between Spanish and Portuguese, but not quite so. And that's not on the language line. So we would have to call a family member because that is a rare and indigenous language. And so I'm like, call a family member. There's got to be an adult family member that can interpret. But no. So ultimately, I started American Frontline Nurses so we can use nurses to help prevent this from happening. And over a year later, on January 25th of 2022, yeah, just a year ago, I was in Washington, D.C., and I spoke with Senator Ron Johnson about what was going on in these hospitals, what was going on with remdesivir, and then what was happening to the people that were getting vaccinated.
Yeah,
I saw a clip of that. And at that point, nobody had talked about the children.
Right.
Nobody had talked about the children yet. And I'm like, I don't think you understand, as nurses on the front lines, we see what's happening 6 months to a year before you guys are going to see what's happening, because we see it in lifetime. And I'm like, this kid had a heart attack. And then what happened several months later? Children started to drop dead. Cardiac events. And then they're like, oh, children have strokes, children have heart attacks. And I'm like, no, they don't. As a nurse for 10 years, I have seen one pediatric cardiac event like that. And it was because of a chemotherapy medication. Like, and that was a risk side effect of that medication. I've never seen a child just drop dead, you know, never. And I've seen traumas where this nonsense with this NFL player where they're like, oh, it's, you know, a hit to the chest. And I'm like,
yeah,
we've flown out bull riders that have been hit to the chest by a bull and they did not die or, you know, have a cardiac event and they crushed their chest.
Right.
So, I mean, so we saw all of this go on. That video goes viral and everyone's like, oh, wow, she actually knows what she's talking about. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, yeah, I've been trying to warn you.
Told you.
The entire time I've been trying to help you guys. But the amazing thing that happened with that video, I mean, it was that whole thing was 4 hours long, but it was my 8 minutes that went once again around the world. And it's been translated into multiple languages, just like the first video. But that video, it went everywhere. And if you Google the, you know, COVID deaths United States, you'll come up with the New York Times number and it'll give you a graph. And if you look and scroll the little bar to January 25th, you'll see that after that, there was a precipitous drop and a sustainment of, fewer and fewer deaths. Like honestly, COVID deaths are next to nothing now. And it's because people know to not get remdesivir. And, you know, the funny thing is people, we say, you know, to decline remdesivir, right? And they're like, yeah, I saw this nurse and she said not to get it. And I'm like, good. Good job. You know, I don't even care if I get credit for it. The fact that everyone knows to not take this drug, this failed Ebola drug that killed everyone with Ebola, and then they pull it off a shelf thinking it's going to help these people. It was never designed for this. It was never designed for this mechanism. Mm-hmm. And that, honestly, that is my crowning accomplishment. If, you know, Jesus were to take me home, I'd be like, I saved millions of lives because people know not to take this drug, and I don't even care if I get credit for it.
There you go.
And ever since then, we've, you know, ever since 2020, we've been helping get people out of the hospital, keep people out of the hospital, keep people from not getting intubated, getting them early intervention, making sure that they are not pulling any shady nonsense in the hospital, like changing your code status, giving you remdesivir by telling you it's a different name, like Veklury, which is the brand name.
Right,
if you follow me on Instagram and yes. TikTok, we do all these very sly videos that doesn't quite tell, like, use trigger words, but it's enough to, that people are like, oh yeah, oh yeah. Right. And then people are like, oh yeah, mm-hmm, in the comment section. I have one TikTok video. Oh, go ahead.
No, I was going to ask you about ivermectin.
I can just ramble. Oh yeah, it works.
That's a legit. Okay. But is that approved to use for COVID though?
It is not.
Yeah.
So what ended up going around was some misdirection. I want to say the National Institute of Health or the FDA, I can't remember, but it said, you know, ivermectin, you know, for COVID. And it says, you know, there are clinical trials going on, but it's still not recommended. Mm-hmm. But here's the thing. Ivermectin works apparently everywhere other than the United States. And this is the interesting part, because it works up and down Africa because of malaria. Mm-hmm. It works up and down, not malaria, because of like water contamination. Mm-hmm. And it worked in India, because I worked in India after I had left New York and was working with that population, rolling that out. It worked in Central and South America. I know, because I was there. You can actually see, like, El Salvador. They had these like little cardboard boxes. They look like treat boxes, and it was all super nice and branded with El Salvador, you know, government seal on it. And it had ivermectin, azithromycin, I think vitamin C and D we had in it. And it was all in this little box, and we would go door to door and we would hand it out. Mm. And I said, you know, it works everywhere in Central and South America. And, you know, here's all these studies. And you know what people told me? They're like, oh, well, you didn't test it in America on, you know, white people. And I'm like, I'm pretty sure because somebody's brown, it's not going to change the difference. Mm-hmm. I mean, I like the asinine logic that people brought in. It's like, well, did you try it? Da, da, da. And I'm like, it's the FLCCC protocol. I absolutely promise you it works. Like I literally in a remote village where it should have been decimated because there's not even running water or electricity and things like that. These people should have been high mortality rate, and everyone there is living, and we can't even keep people in Stanford alive when we've got all this high tech equipment. I'm pretty sure it's called early intervention. And, you know, then, ivermectin started to get more and more traction, especially after Pierre Corey went on Joe Rogan. And then ivermectin got really hard to get because it just kind of exploded, because somebody on mainstream media acknowledged it. And then that made that incredibly hard to get it even in Mexico. I think like a 4-hour drive into Mexico, you couldn't even get ivermectin, because you can just get most pharmaceuticals like over the counter there. Mm-hmm. And then we started to bring it in from India with All Day Chemist. And then Customs was starting to take the packages. So it was this cat and mouse game. And I honestly think, I'm like, are we healthcare workers? Are we just the new drug cartel, like smuggling in dewormer to the country? Like, what's going on here? And then it just became this fight between the pharmacies. And then they brought the licensing boards in. And it just became all out war on ivermectin. But I can tell you right now, in 3 years, I've only lost 3 patients. Mm. And I'm telling you, we've helped thousands of patients. I'm talking like over 100,000. I know that when we worked with My Free Doctor getting everyone ivermectin, the numbers with them were up to 300,000, and they only lost 1 patient because they got to them too late. Yeah. So, I mean, how is it that we could save all of these people and you're telling me it doesn't work? I mean, statistically at this point, we can say that it works. We may not know at that time, we may not know the mechanism, but we know it works. So I don't have time. Like, when you're in field medicine, you have to do things in live time. I'm not going to be like, oh, I'm sorry, can you just not die for a couple months while we get a peer-reviewed study?
Yeah.
And I'm just like, that's not how it works in field medicine when you're actually out in the field. And so you've got all of these like clipboard nurses that have only worked in units, have never actually had to work field medicine, like over here judging you, saying you're spreading misinformation, you're spreading lies, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, okay, you guys can't gaslight me a second time. F you all, I'm going to go save all these people.
There you go.
And then the vaccine rolled out, and then a whole second set of problems started to arise, and it's just been pandemonium ever since.
Yeah, that vaccine, I tell you, you mentioned the football player a few minutes ago, and you know what I don't understand, and what are your thoughts on it? People, they see what's happening, right? They're hearing, it seems like every day, every week, people having these cardiac events, but yet and still, obviously the government and other organizations are still pushing the vax. Why is it that people still want to take the damn vax and get all these boosters and all this? What is, are they that programmed to where they have so much trust in medicine and in the government? Is that what it is?
Honestly, there are, and this is interesting because there's a lot of digital hate groups out there, because this is kind of what we've been dealing with recently, is that there are pro-vaccine groups, many that are starting to pop up all over since the inception of the COVID vaccine. And they're using social media influencers to support the narrative. Yeah. And it's really interesting because I do a TikTok series called Safe and Effective. And I say, you know, this is Nicole Sarachek with American Frontline Nurses, and this is the face of Safe and Effective. And then I show a picture of somebody who's been harmed by the vaccine. And I tell their story. And, you know, it's so interesting because nurses are like, if there's vaccine injured, they'd be coming into the hospital. They'll literally go on my thing and say, well, if they're injured, they'd come into the hospital. And I'm like, well, with that type of attitude, they're probably like concerned that you're not going to treat them if they say that they're vaccine injured. Because we've actually seen a lot of discrimination of people who are unvaccinated not getting treatment because it was pretty bad. But, you know, empirically, when you look at it, I think the overall booster rate in the United States is only 30%. Oh. I think people are waking up.
Okay.
They just won't say anything out loud or on a platform because there's consequences. There's especially consequences if you're a healthcare worker, because the AMA and the ANA, so the American Nurses Association and the American Medical Association, came out with a position statement on spreading false information. Mm. They called COVID misinformation. And they said it must have scientific information and it must be approved by the CDC and the FDA. So you can have scientific information that says, hey, this works. This is what's going on. And it will still be considered false information because the second part of the clause is that the FDA and the CDC has to approve the information. Mm. And that, I mean, because literally there are research articles coming out about myocarditis, and we saw that. There are research articles coming out about the clots, and we saw that, and we told everybody. And we were still reported to the licensing boards. And so there's numerous organizations that were created by the World Economic Forum and the Rockefeller Foundation using social media influencers in order to propagate the positive COVID vaccine narrative and to attack anyone that says otherwise. Yeah. And so some of those organizations are called Team Halo, and another one is called Shots Heard Round the World. And quite honestly, I think they're hate groups. Mm-hmm. I think they're hate groups. Because they've targeted me and my organization since January 25th when I was in DC. And what they do, Shots Heard Around the World, what they do is they have thousands of people call your licensing board or report you to social media and ultimately just terrorize you and try and get your license taken. And I'm just like, what are you people doing? And the scary part is they're healthcare workers. A lot of them are healthcare workers. And so on your social media, on your video that says, you know, hey, ivermectin works, this is how you dose it, you know, and you're educating somebody on ivermectin and the side effects and whatever, how to get it, where to take it. And they're over here threatening to kill your dog or, you know, threatening to burn down your house. And I'm like, you're a doctor, you're a nurse, you're a respiratory therapist. Like, what Like, you, would you really say this to somebody in real life that you're going to go do this? I'm like, are you insane? Because I'm telling someone to take this off-label medication. And so we've just been dealing with a lot of digital hate and stalking and harassment to the point where, like, honestly, I was getting letters sent to my house threatening that someone's going to rape and murder my children in front of me. They're going to burn my house down. I'm not even joking you. Like, I wonder if I have, like, some, I don't think I have any easy access here. But, you know, I filed a police report. And then the police are like, oh, you know, she runs an extremist group, is what the report said. And I'm like, if you mean by extremist group, a nonprofit organization that specifically assists, you know, low-income Blacks and Hispanics and other minority groups to not get negligent care in the hospitals, do you mean that kind of an extremist group? And I'm like, okay, the police aren't going to help me. The licensing board just wants me gone because they don't want to deal with this drama of hundreds of people calling their phones and blowing up their emails and jamming up their faxes. Mm-hmm. You know, the governor does not want to deal with me. The health department is done because they're just jamming the phone lines, jamming the emails. And when I say thousands of people, I mean thousands of people. It's a digital cavalry with shots heard around the world. You can literally open up their website. It says exactly what they do. They will attack you on social media and report you. So, I mean, and I'm just like, here's the thing. I surrendered my nursing license because I was like a handful of complaints deep that I couldn't afford to fight back. Okay. And I'm like, okay, well, let's just give them the blood that they want. And I'm like, you know, I'm a nurse in all these other areas. Uh-huh. Who cares? Like, they can have this one license. I don't really care. I have all these people that need help, and these people are distracting me from helping them, which is part of their mission, is to prevent me from doing my job. Mm. And so at this point, I'm just like, I am losing it. And then I went as far as legally changing my name because I was being stalked and harassed. And then the psychos go and put it up on a TikTok. And then we end up with a bomb threat while we're in Puerto Rico helping the Puerto Rican people. And we had to be evacuated. And I'm just like, I mean, this is now beyond. I mean, we are beyond just somebody calling you a mean name. Yeah. I mean, we're like, literally the government had to escort our bus. I mean, we had Peter McCullough on there. We had Dr. Thorpe on there. We had Dr. Thomas on the bus. And I'm like, are we going to die today? Like, what? Like, and the Puerto Rican government escorts us back to the hotel. And I'm just like, is this real life? I mean, we're literally just telling you to take ivermectin. And please be concerned that these shots are killing the children and everyone else.
There you go.
Right. And they... you're going to blow up the building because we're in it. Dang. I mean, we're beyond this is pro-vax, anti-vax. We're at, there is something sinister going on. And
absolutely. Absolutely.
That's where I'm at now.
Mm-hmm. That's where you're at now. Well, I thank you so much for standing in your truth and doing with you what you do. You know, I've been checking out your website here, American Frontline Nurses, for the past several days, and you have a lot going on and you're doing a lot of good things. And we need more people like you. You're not afraid to speak up. You're not afraid to stand in your truth, and you do what you do for people, for humanity. And I definitely want to thank you for that. Another question I have for you, Nicole. Of course. You're welcome. I saw you post recently about how the FDA and licensing boards are trying to silence healthcare professionals. Tell me a little bit about that. That sounds pretty interesting in a bad way.
Oh, the Epoch Times?
Yeah.
Yeah, the Epoch Times article. Mm-hmm. Well, I just want to thank Katie Spence from the Epoch Times because no one is addressing this. Because they're like, oh, well, if what you're saying is true, Nicole, all these doctors and nurses and everyone else would stand up behind you. And I'm like... do you know what they're doing to us? First of all, see what you're doing to me? This is why they're not speaking up either. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, the incompetence is unreal with this. But here, like, this is how I put things into context, is if you were to lose your job today, could you financially survive if your actual livelihood was taken away? So let's say you're a truck driver and your livelihood is your truck and your truck is in an accident and that's how you support and make your family. Could you financially survive? If you are a small business owner and let's say you own a pizza joint and your building burns down, would you be able to financially survive and keep your home and put food on the table? As a nurse or a doctor that has a licensing board, if they were to take your license, would you be able to pay your bills, not lose your house, not lose your car, not end up homeless on the street? Like, and I'm literally saying literally end up homeless on the street, because that's what's happened to many healthcare professionals who are vaccine injured and could not work. I had to talk a nurse down from committing suicide just a week ago because she took two of the vaccine and she's unable to work. And, you know, her disability has ran out. And, you know, she's waiting for like Social Security and everything like that. But no doctor believes that she's injured and that she has all this extreme pain and has these syncopic episodes and things like that. So that to the point that her life has deteriorated so badly, the quality of life, that she actually wanted to commit suicide. She's like, in 30 days, I'm going to lose my house. And I don't know where me and my children are going to go. I'm a single mom. And she's been a nurse for like over 20 years. And I'm just like, oh my God, what? I mean, and this is just one story. This is just one story, one person. And so that's what I tell people. I'm like, they have us choke held by our licenses. And I mean, luckily enough for me, I have other degrees and other credentialing I can fall back on, because ever since 2020, I've been washed up as a nurse. I can't get a job anywhere. I tried. I cannot escape a Google search. Wow. So I'm just like, That is exactly what's happening. And it's ridiculous. And Katie Spence from the Epoch Times, you know, we showed her all of the stuff. Like, here's the news brief that came out November 21st November 12th, 2021, from the American Nurses Association and the National Council of State Board of Nursing and the other accrediting bodies, that says, you know, peer-reviewed information that's approved by the FDA and the CDC. I'm like, it doesn't matter how much research is out there, because there's a second clause to that. And so she spoke with the nurses and the doctors, and I'm like, look, there's a lot of bad things going on there. They're silencing us and we're telling people that they're dying. And no one is listening, because the propaganda on their television is telling them something otherwise, or they do know and they're afraid to say anything.
Wow. That's insane. That's insane. Now, one more question for you. So I've had several guests on the show where they have said that they believe that, you know, it is something sinister behind it, as you said. And I know you also mentioned the World Economic Forum, as well as the Rockefeller Foundation. And I don't want to go too deep down the rabbit hole, but like, what are your thoughts, your personal thoughts on, you know, this being done purposely, this being planned years in advance? You know, some people say population control or depopulation. Do you kind of align with that or no?
I mean, you know, honestly, you could probably see that it could be population control. But if history shows us one thing, is that money drives the world. So is it so much about population control, or is it about greed? Because the healthcare system will bankrupt you financially, saying that they help save your life, and not care if you can't afford to eat when you get home for that life that you saved. You know, farmers, like, ultimately, I think it's corporate greed. And corporate greed does not care about all these little people. Did ExxonMobil and BP care about the environment when they cut all those corners that led to all of those, like, the oil spills? Right. No, they only cared once they got caught. Mm-hmm. You know, did, you know, what about numerous drugs like thalidomide? I think it's thalidomide, that they gave pregnant women that caused gross birth defects. Mm-hmm. That nobody said anything until a lawsuit happened. Mm-hmm. Why do you know, the FDA doesn't actually have authority to recall a drug. They have to request that the pharmaceutical company do that. And would a pharmaceutical company like recall their cash cow, their golden goose? Mm-mm. No, it comes back to corporate greed. Mm-hmm. I mean, all of these major industrial, like real estate organizations that buy up all the homes, so it drives up the cost of housing and it pushes people out where they can never own a home or even afford an apartment. It's corporate greed. And so honestly, I mean, you can subscribe to, you know, the depopulation agenda, but honestly, I think it's selfishness and corporate greed. Gotcha. It's like the most obvious and historically accurate thing I've seen.
Okay. So tell me about Pure Blood Blood Bank. That's something interesting that you talked about recently on social media.
Yeah. So there's a lot of talk about organ transplant and blood transfusions. Mm-hmm. And everyone is trying to say that there's no concern with the blood bank blood. And I'm like, absolutely there is. Absolutely there is. We're getting so many people coming to us that are having adverse reactions after a blood transfusion, even just one unit. And it's typically clotting issues that we're starting to see. And, you know, I'm sure you saw about that baby. I want to say it was Washington that the family found a donor, like a, it was a family member that was going to donate, and they got CPS involved, took away custody of the child, gave the child, blood from the blood bank, and then clotted and died when surgery itself had like a 98% survival rate.
Wow.
So I think, yeah, that happened several months ago, but we're seeing this all over the place. And we're also seeing a huge jump in organ rejection rates across the country. And like I said, we see this months before anyone realizes it, because right, at American right. Frontline Nurses, we actually have 22,000 nurses across the country, 30,000 if you include all of our nurses in the other countries, okay, you know, that are part of our organization. And I'm like, there is an issue. And so when people start to identify like a problem, a solution springs up. But it doesn't necessarily mean it's an effective solution. So there's a place, one place was, I honestly think, called Pure Blood Bank or something like that. There's at least 10 or 15 of them that have popped up. And we've investigated every single one that people have sent to us. And, you know, each one of these organizations, it's about matching you with a donor, which is, yeah, I mean, yeah. I mean, you can match somebody with a donor, but they neglect to see how blood is harvested, how it's processed, and how it's distributed. If you don't understand that process, then you can't understand that your system isn't going to work. So you can't just show up with your donor and say, hey, you know, my friend here that I found from the donor registry is going to give blood to me.
Correct.
And they're going to just be like, yeah, no, that's not happening. They're going to go down to the laboratory fridge and they're going to go get whatever unit of blood that has been, you know, crossed and typed for you. And a unit of blood can come from up to 10 different donors. So if anyone wants to tell you, oh no, one unit of blood comes from one donor, tell them bullshit, because our transfusion nurses and our blood bank nurses are telling us otherwise, you know, and that's standard practice. I mean, they check it for HIV, hepatitis, and like, honestly, they gave me a list of things and I'm like, okay, yeah. You know, and if, let me just tell you something about history, is that in the 90s, they did not check the blood for HIV. And the blood banks gave a lot of people, including children, HIV, because they did not check. It wasn't until so many people were infected with it that somebody stepped in and did something about it. But what about all the people that were infected?
Right, right.
Exactly. Right. That's like, you know, out where I live, that's called closing the gate after you already let the cattle out. That's not going to help you. You should have closed the gate first and the cattle never would have gotten out. So we're seeing that with the blood bank, and we're trying to explain to people because some of them have a subscription. You have to pay a monthly fee. And I'm like, you're more than welcome to do whatever you want, to donate to those organizations, to pay the subscription fee or membership fee or whatever you want. I'm not going to tell you not to do that. However, I want you to be prepared for if this does not work. And so that's why we told them about synthetic blood, because a lot of Jehovah Witnesses will use that. We're 4 hours away from Utah, which has a lot of Jehovah Witnesses, and many of the hospitals carry synthetic blood, as well as other major centers that are near kind of religious epicenters, I guess you could say. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, I just want you to be prepared for when they say no. You know, and it's also not going to work. Let's say you're in a car accident. And I mean, being a flight nurse, I can't tell you how many times I've picked up body appendages. And I'm like, and let's say your hand gets chopped off. That's a typical ATV accident. You know, you're in your ATV, you roll, and like the cage comes down, and honestly, it'll chop off your hand or an ankle or something like that. Mm-hmm. And you've bled out probably 3 units of blood. You've got 3 units left inside of you. You're in cardiovascular collapse, and they're shipping you to whatever hospital, and they're going to infuse you with however much blood to prevent end organ perfusion and death. You don't have time to go get your donor and have the blood screened, crossed and typed, processed. I mean, you'd be dead. You'd be dead. So even in trauma situations, you're not going to be able to use that service. And so I just, it's not about telling people what not to do. It's about informing them on what can happen so they can make educated decisions for their healthcare. So I'm like, that's why I said, it may not be feasible to use these. Here's why. Here's a possible alternative. But this alternative, like the synthetic blood, may not be available everywhere. There is no perfect solution because you have to recreate the blood donor bank system, the harvesting, the processing, the regulations, and that is very, very highly regulated. And so to interject a new system into that is going to be a huge, huge fight, and it's going to cost a lot of money. And so far, nobody has that type of bang and that type of buck to do it. Yeah. And I mean, I hope they will. I hope that will happen. But in the meantime, I want people to be prepared, because if you educate someone on what's about to happen, when it happens, they can break out some of their information out of their little toolkit. And they're like, okay, I knew this was going to happen. I can do X, Y, and Z. And you feel a lot better, right? I feel better when I carry a jack and an air pump in my car in case I get a flat tire. I'm like, oh, no big deal. I got a crowbar, I got a jack, and I got a spare tire. I'd be much more concerned if I didn't have those things. And how often do I have to change my tire? It's probably been one time every couple of years.
Right.
But I knew I had that stuff, and I knew I could handle the situation because I was prepared for the situation. And so that's what we do about, we were educating people about the pure blood banks.
Excellent. Thank you so much, Nicole. One last question for you, I promise. This is sure. One thing I ask each and every guest that comes on the Hidden Gateway podcast. If you could please leave our listeners with what I like to call a token of love, something you think they need to know in this moment from the heart. It can be a minute, two, three, 4 minutes. What do you think? And you've already given so much great information, so thank you. But just something that you think that people need to hear, something important.
Honestly, what I've been hearing is people are starting to just get angry. They're starting to lose hope. They're starting to become disenchanted. They're starting to be just angry, I think, or fatigued, because they're just done with this nonsense. If it's not the mandates, they're dropping the mandates. They're retracting their stories. Masks don't work. Well, we told you they didn't work. And after the fact that they've already been abused and victimized, and then to come to find out that there's like the World Economic Forum and Rockefeller money that you're up against, and people start to lose hope, or they just become, I guess, unneighborly, like they're not going to help somebody, or it's, I told you so. And so what I just tell everybody is everyone wakes up at different rates, and it's typically a triggering traumatic event that causes somebody to wake up and see what we've been saying. And what they need at that time is not, I told you so. It's, come here. We got you. This is what you need to do. And we're here for you. And just, take care of each other, because waking up is incredibly scary, and they're going to need a tribe.
Wow. That's so good. Thank you so much. I appreciate you. And if you could just tell the audience where they can find you, go ahead and give your website, social media, et cetera.
Oh, yeah. So you can find us online at AmericanFrontlineNurses.org. And you'll find in the tab bar, there's early intervention resources under the Advocate Network. You'll find our Telegram chat that's manned 24 hours a day, 7 days a week by nurses to answer your questions. I always recommend that you follow American Frontline Nurses on all the major mainstream social medias, as well as the Freedom Minded platforms. And follow me on Instagram and TikTok. We need a lot of love on TikTok, because like the WEF is against us and the CCP on TikTok. Mm-hmm. So go like us over there and follow us, and check out our videos. We're educating people every day on what's going on and how to keep you safe.
Excellent, Nicole. Thank you so much once again for being a guest on the Hidden Gateway podcast. Good people, you heard her. Go get on, check out TikTok, get on the website, Telegram, nurses answering questions 24 hours a day. Good stuff. As always, we hope you enjoyed this episode of the Hidden Gateway podcast. Please remember to stay connected with us directly at thehiddengateway.com. Shoot us email at support@thehiddengateway.com if you need to chat. This will conclude this week's episode. Until next time, stay positive, stay questioning, be love, and be free. The Hidden Gateway, out.